the gospel will overcome. In a world full of sorrow, by evil overrun, where darkness is veiled, the light of the sun.
You're listening to The Dean's List, an analysis of news, culture, and theological trends from a biblical worldview. This is your place for intelligent conversation on the relevant issues of our day, each Friday and Saturday at 11:30 and each Sunday at noon. And now, here's the host of The Dean's List, Dr. Paul Dean.
Welcome to the Dean's List. This is Paul Dean. Something that we talk about fairly regularly with one another is this whole issue of gay marriage. Seems that we're talking about it a little bit more these days in light of the fact that the Supreme Court heard arguments last week. More on that in just a moment. Came across a blog. Shane Kassler has a wonderful blog that I consult many, many times throughout the week. It's called the Narrow Road blog. But anyway, he cites in a particular post called Using Logic to Refute Gay Marriage. He says essentially that after a speech defending the traditional view of marriage as being between a man and a woman, Ryan Anderson took questions from the audience. And there was a homosexual individual in the audience, a gay man. He stood up and he asked why Anderson thought it was acceptable to discriminate against him and his partner by not granting them the legal right to marry. The question was actually posed under the guise of the federal income tax code, and the homosexual man wanted the right to file his taxes jointly with his husband or future husband, as the case may be, and thus receive the same potential tax break as a heterosexual married couple that files jointly. Ryan Anderson's answer was quite good, and I want to talk about that for just a moment before we get to the Supreme Court and the debate there. And by the way, let me just say to you that Ryan Anderson is the William E. Simon Senior Research Fellow in American Principles and Public Policy at the Heritage Foundation. He's also the editor of Public Discourse, which is the online journal of the Witherspoon Institute. But anyway, just want you to hear this question, want you to hear some of Ryan Anderson's answer. Let's listen to it now, Gary.
So my question is, why should I not have the right to file a joint tax return? Why should I pay more taxes than a straight couple simply because I'm a minority? How is that not discrimination?
Sure. And that's a fair question. What if we were to say, why should I not be able to file a joint tax return just because I'm in a throuple or a quartet? I mean, so it seems to me what you're suggesting is that we just shouldn't have the tax code recognize marriage. No. All right, so then you think that we should have same-sex marriage for same-sex couples, but would you also extend marriage equality rights to the throuple?
So my question really is, why should I, as a gay man, be denied the same same right to file a joint tax return
right
with my potential husband that a straight couple
and
has?
I just want to play out what principle you're acting on, because I would hope that you're not just doing special pleading, that you want protection for your rights but not for all Americans' rights. So I would hope that you wouldn't be saying that you want special tax treatment but I don't care about the throuples. So I want to see what principle you're acting on. And does the principle that you're hoping to vindicate to protect your rights also extend to protect the rights of the throuple?
Sure. So I'm acting on civil rights. And so the rights that are applicable to a male and female couple are applicable to a male and male couple. And that's my question.
How
is that not discrimination?
Let's just stop right there for a moment, Gary. Yeah, we'll stop right there, and then we'll pick it back up in just a moment. Obviously, you know, the gentleman is asking, why don't I have the right to file jointly, just like a heterosexual couple? Why are you discriminating me or against me? And essentially, if you think about it, there are a couple of issues going on there. One of the things that Ryan Anderson says is that I hope you're not falling into the fallacy of special pleading. I hope you're not wanting to redefine marriage to benefit yourself and your partner, but you don't care about anyone else. In other words, would you extend the rights that you want to a throuple, you know, a group of three? Or would you extend those rights to a heterosexual quartet? If you only want the benefits for, you know, that man and woman, and then a man and man or a woman and woman, but if you're not willing to extend those benefits to the throuple or the quartet, well, then, you know, the reality is that, you know, you're discriminating as well. So the question really is, would you define, would you extend those rights to a throuple or a marriage quartet? If you say no, well, then you've really defeated your own argument. If you say no, what you're saying is, well, they're not really marriages. See, but you want to define your relationship as a marriage. And the actuality is that if you say, well, yes, I would extend those benefits to the throuple or to the quartet or whoever else, well, now you're essentially saying that, well, you just don't want marriage at all. You're defeating the whole idea of marriage. You want people to be able to enter into any kind of relationship they want, whether it's three people, four people, 10 people, 12 people. It could be a pedophile who enters into a relationship with a child. It could be someone who wants to marry his pet, and you want special benefits, special tax benefits, for example, extended to those folks. What about two brothers who live together? Now we want to give special benefits to them. I mean, it goes on and on ad infinitum. I think Ryan Anderson says it better than I do. Gary, let's just pick up here in just a moment. Not only the issue that Anderson's trying to get at, and I don't think the questioner really understands, but there's another issue as well, and this is really where we're going.
Yes, so I'm trying to see. Right, so part of the answer is that because the same-sex couple isn't a marriage. And so that we want marriage equality to treat all marital relationships in the same way. And given the understanding I've presented of what marriage is, same-sex relationship isn't marital. But I'm trying to ask you about the equal protection argument you're making. Would it apply to all consenting adult romantic relationships? So why would you want the same-sex couple to file jointly for taxes, but not the same-sex throuple or the opposite-sex quartet?
Sure. I appreciate that. And that's not I'm sorry, but that's not actually my question. My question is, why should I be denied
I'll answer your question. The reason that you should not have the option of filing a joint tax return is because you can't get married. Given
but
what
I
marriage
can in California.
Is,
I can get
given
married.
You can be issued a marriage license in the state of California, but you can't actually get married. And I'm sorry to say it that way, but given what marriage is,
and
a
how
union
is that
sexually
not discrimination?
Complementary. And it's not discrimination because everyone is equally eligible for entering into the marital relationship, where you understand marriage as a union of sexually complementary spouses, a permanent exclusive union of man and woman, husband and wife, mother and father. If you're not interested in entering into that sort of a union, you're not being discriminated against. What you're asking us to do is to redefine marriage to include the adult relationship of your choice. And the adult relationship of your choice happens to be a same-sex couple. There are other adults who want to have marriage redefined to include the relationship of their choice, which may be the same-sex throuple or the opposite-sex quartet. And so what I'm asking you in response is, what principle are you appealing to when you say this is discrimination to vindicate your rights but not their rights? Because
sure.
It seems to me that your position ultimately leads to simply the dissolvement of the marital union.
Sure. So there's other speakers in line, so we can always talk at lunch. But I just want to clarify, I just heard you do not have the right to get married. So if you could tell me why I don't have the right to get married, that would be my final question.
Sure.
Thank
you.
I feel like we
have 5 minutes left, so I'll just say this again briefly. I feel like I've already answered that. It's not that you don't have a right to get married. It's that you aren't seeking out marriage. Marriage is, by nature, a union of sexually complementary spouses, a union of man and woman, husband and wife, mother and father. And just based upon what you've said about yourself, it doesn't sound like you're interested in forming that sort of a union. It sounds like you're interested in forming a union with another man, and that's not a marriage. So that's why I don't think the law should treat the relationship that you want to form as a marriage. Who is next?
All right. Now, if we're just talking about the issue of marriage and a legal definition of marriage, what Ryan Anderson, of course, is saying is very clear there. Marriage has been defined and is defined as between a man and a woman. And so he's really keying in on, at this point, a redefinition of marriage, which is what obviously the individual is asking about. Why can't we redefine it that way, or why am I being discriminated against? Using different kinds of language to really ask the same question. Would you extend those benefits to anyone and everyone? Again, if the answer is no, well, then you're engaging in special pleading. You want benefits that you don't want others to have. If the answer is yes, then essentially you're dissolving the whole concept of marriage, and you're saying, well, anyone and everyone, for whatever reason, for whatever relationship, whatever kind of relationship they have, ought to be able to get these same benefits. And so we're really in a quagmire here. And I think that this is part of the reason why people on both sides of the issue, they seem to talk past one another so often. And obviously things become emotional and you know, you're discriminating against me, or, you know, you want this. Here's the problem. What we need to do is have some honest dialogue. What we need to do is have some honest debate and lay the issues on the table. And I think both sides need to be honest about that. And obviously, as a Christian, we certainly want to be honest, but we want the other folk to be honest as well. We need, well, I can't say it any better than that, honest dialogue. Now, that brings me to the issue of the Supreme Court. Now, I'm going to cite a couple of pieces here, but as the Supreme Court debated the meaning of marriage and the consequences of redefining marriage, and see, the Supreme Court saw very quickly that that's, you know, what we're talking about. And, of course, we all know that. And we'll get to some biblical arguments here in just a moment. But right now, we're just talking about legal issues. And Ryan Anderson posted sort of a summary out at the Witherspoon Institute on public discourse. And I recommend that very highly. But essentially, the question, what is marriage? Well, just a couple of responses before we go to the break. Justice Anthony Kennedy pointed out that, you know, thinking marriage is the union of a man and a woman has been with us for millennia. And it's very difficult for the court to say, well, you know, we know better. So this is something that happened over and over again during the discussions last week. Chief Justice John Roberts said this: every definition that I looked up prior to about a dozen years ago defined marriage as unity between a man and a woman, husband and wife. And so he said to those arguing the other side, you're not seeking to join the institution. And this is what Anderson was saying. You're not seeking to join the institution. You're seeking to change what the institution is. The fundamental core of the institution is the opposite sex relationship, and you want to introduce into it a same-sex relationship. Now, there's more to say about that, but at least we got the ball rolling. If you're listening to The Dean's List, I hope you'll stay tuned. We'll be right back.
For over 20 years, Breakpoint has brought the Christian worldview to light over the airwaves. The late Chuck Colson's vision was that if you can get people thinking clearly about God's truth, you can change the culture and society. And now, we're able to delve even deeper into the worldview issues we need to understand through the half-hour weekend program, Breakpoint This Week, with John Stonestreet and guests. Tune in for the next edition. See you then on Breakpoint This Week.
Sunday afternoons at 1:30 on Christian Talk 660.
Sticky Fingers Rib House serves the best St. Louis-style ribs, pulled pork barbecue, and wings, all slow-smoked on site. Established in 1992 in Mount Pleasant, they now have 15 locations throughout the Southeast, including downtown Greenville. Their signature barbecue salsas are served daily, along with their homemade starters, sides, and desserts. They'll also deliver lunch to your office staff, or you can call Lacey Smith at 297-7200 to cater your next special event. Sticky Fingers. Get sticky. Have fun.
North Greenville University and Alex McFarland invite you to hear the best assembly of Christian speakers available anywhere this year at Truth for a New Generation. It's going to be at First Baptist Spartanburg, September 18th and 19th. The theme this year is Jesus, America's Hope. Come hear the Benham Brothers, Lee Strobel, Dr. Alveda King, Will Graham, Dell Tackett, Todd Starnes. Get your early bird ticket prices and get them today by going to truthforanewgeneration.com. That's truthforanewgeneration.com.
Miracle Hill provides a bridge to homeless and hurting children and adults. on Saturday, June 6th. Bring your whole family to Furman University for the annual Interim Healthcare Miracle Hill Challenge. Registration is now open. Choose from a certified 5K run or a 20, 40, 62, or 100-mile ride. And for the kids, a Miracle Mile Fun Run. Register online at miraclehill.org. Miracle Hill Ministries, shelter, food, and miracles every day.
Welcome back to the Dean's List. For more resources, including articles, books, and archived broadcasts, simply log on to trueworldview.net. Once again, here's your host for today's edition, Dr. Paul Dean.
How much experience do we have with redefined marriage? That's one of the issues that came up as the Supreme Court heard arguments last week on this whole issue of gay marriage. Ryan Anderson points out that twice Justice Scalia said there wasn't any society prior to the Netherlands in 2001 that permitted same-sex marriage. Scalia ridiculed the idea that the plaintiffs were asking us to decide it for this society when no other society until 2001 ever had it. Justice Kennedy seemed reluctant to judicially redefine marriage as well. Redefining marriage to include same-sex relationships has, Kennedy pointed out, only been around for about 10 years. I don't even know how to count the decimals when we talk about millennia, he said. Even Justice Stephen Breyer got in on the act. He said that marriage is understood as the union of a man and a woman. It's been the law everywhere for thousands of years among people who were not discriminating, even against gay people. And suddenly you want nine people outside the ballot box to require states that don't want to do it to change what marriage is? I mean, you could see these justices are struggling. I mean, it's obviously it's a hot button issue in our nation. A lot of political pressure, a lot of social pressure. But here's the question Justice Breyer's asking: why can't those states at least wait and see whether, in fact, doing so in other states is or is not harmful to marriage? And one of the things that the justices pointed out was that, hey, you know what? You know, if we don't redefine marriage, if we keep it the way it is between a man and a woman, it's not really anti-gay. It's just not. Samuel Alito pointed to a near, and I'm quoting from Ryan Anderson's article now, pointed to a near universal historical consensus about what marriage is. Asked if the lawyer was seriously going to argue that that where we are, no recognition of gay marriage in the history of the world, is that the result of anti-gay sentiment? He says, how do you account for the fact that, as far as I'm aware, this is Justice Samuel Alito, until the end of the 20th century, there never was a nation or culture that recognized marriage between two people of the same sex. Now, we can infer from that that those nations and those cultures all thought that there was some rational, practical purpose for defining marriage in that way. Or is it your argument that they were all operating independently based solely on irrational stereotypes and prejudice? Are you saying all of these cultures were prejudiced against gay people? Well, we know that that's not true historically. We know that there are a number of cultures that did not frown on homosexuality at all. I've cited myself in other things that I've written. Ancient Greece, tremendous example where homosexuality was a good thing as far as they were concerned. Man-boy relationship, that was a good thing as far as they were concerned. And yet, Alito rightly points out, people like Plato, you know, wrote in favor of homosexuality, etc. Yet, in ancient Greece, people like Plato never thought that a same-sex relationship was a marriage. That's the issue. So, Alito concludes, they're limiting marriage to couples of the opposite sex is not based on prejudice against gay people. So, that's his conclusion. Chief Justice Roberts also highlighted another important clarification. He says, what petitioners are arguing for in this case, and this is not a quote, this is a summary from Anderson, but nevertheless, Justice Roberts, petitioners are arguing not for freedom from government, but what they want is government affirmation. Of course, we've all heard this before. That's what they're after. They're after government affirmation, social affirmation, etc. And Roberts went on to explain that in a previous Supreme Court case, quote, the whole argument is the state cannot intrude on that personal relationship. Now they're saying the state must sanction, it must approve that relationship. Those are two very different questions. So, you know, we're arguing different things depending upon what it is that we want on this particular day. And again, I'm not belittling or making fun of those who are in favor of gay marriage. I'm just saying we've got to be able to think logically. We've got to be able to keep the facts on the table as we dialogue about these things. As I said in the first half of the broadcast, we've got to have honest conversation. We've got to have some honest brokers, and I think that's what the justices are trying to be at this point, at least as far as I can tell so far. So the real issue is, are we going to redefine marriage? One of the other things that was brought out in the dialogue at the court, what are the purposes of marriage? You know, Ryan Anderson says, as far as the government's concerned, there's no benefit to promoting or affirming consenting adult romance for its own sake. You know, I'll just add this. You know, you've got a boyfriend and a girlfriend. Does the government have anything to say about that? It really doesn't. You know, you've got two guys who like one another. The government doesn't say anything about that. So his point is that the government's not into promoting or affirming or denying or saying anything at all about adult romance. That's not the issue here. But there are incalculable social benefits to uniting mothers and fathers with each other and with their children. See, you got a biological issue going on here, male, female, mother, father, and you've got a familial issue going on around going on here, children. Here's what one of the other justices, John Birch, the lawyer who defended the marriage laws in Michigan. Here's what he said at that point. He said, imagine a world today where we had no marriage at all. Men and women would still be getting together and creating children, but they wouldn't be attached to each other in any social institution. Now, the marriage view on the other side here is that marriage is all about love and commitment. And as a society, we can agree that that's important. But the state doesn't have any interest in that. If we're trying to solve that social problem I just described, where there's no marriage, we wouldn't solve it by saying, well, let's have people identify who they're emotionally committed to and recognize those relationships. So you see what they're saying. What we're talking about is, we're not just talking about an emotional attachment to someone. We're not just talking about, you know, people have feelings for someone. Those things are not necessarily lasting. Those things are not bound up in a legal sense. Those things don't necessarily assign responsibility for parents to their own children. Now, I could do a whole entire broadcast on that particular issue and whether we had marriages defined by the government or sanctioned by the government at all as to whether or not we could require parents to take some responsibility if they bear children. We should. That is one of the things that the state should do if we're talking about the role of government. They should ensure that legally, they should ensure that parents who bear children take responsibility for those children one way or another. The point here, I think, is that ideas matter. And one of the things that the justices are arguing for is, look, or at least talking about at this point, why don't we take some time? Let's watch what happens. Let's not only watch what happens in the states that have already allowed same-sex marriage, but let's watch what happens with those couples, with those children, with those families, and let's watch what happens to society. We just don't know yet. It's just upon us. It's only a few years upon us. But not only that, what they're saying is this: why don't we allow democracy to work out marriage policy? Why are we rushing to make a decision here? I mean, all of us know that the court's decision to rush to a decision on abortion created untold, unexpected, incalculable, unbelievable consequences. And this is still the primary issue that divides us as a nation today. I don't know how many years has it been? 40 years since Roe v. Wade. So part of what they're saying is, why rush into it? Now, some kind of decision, I think, is expected by the end of June. We're still talking about this. But I'm happy that the court is asking these questions. These are ethical questions. They're philosophical questions. They're policy questions, consequential questions. I'm glad to hear it. Ideas do matter. Ideas do have consequences. And we better be very, very careful before we simply rush out here and redefine marriage. Now, there are a lot of other things I could say, you know, from the scriptures in terms of marriage. There are other issues that Christians are concerned about. For example, one of the things that I guess it was, is the Solicitor General of the United States. When asked a question from one of the justices, I think it was Alito, you know, is religious freedom, you know, going to be an issue here? And the Solicitor General of the United States said, yes, it's going to be an issue. He didn't know exactly how it was going to play out. But one of the practical questions that came out was, you know, how is this going to affect Christian schools, for example? You know, if you go ahead and say, okay, you know, now we're going to legalize same-sex marriage and you can't discriminate in any way, you know, against same-sex married couples, you're talking about a Christian school, are we going to say that the Christian school has to enroll, you know, students? They may not want to. Are they going to have to hire, you know, same-sex couples? What kinds of student service? Are they going to have to provide housing? If they provide housing for married people, are they going to have to provide housing for gay married couples? These are big questions, and so the issue of religious freedom is now on the table once again. Got a lot more to say about that. Wish I had time. But I guess what I'll do is come back to what the justices are saying, at least at this point. Let's take some time. Let's think this through a little bit more. Let's talk about it a little bit more. This is a major decision. Obviously, as Christians, we can't affirm gay marriage. We know God is the one who's defined marriage as between a man and a woman. We'll leave it there for today, but a lot more dialogue around these issues in weeks to come, in months to come. Stay tuned.
You've been listening to The Dean's List, an analysis of news, culture, and theological trends from a biblical worldview. To access archived broadcasts, go to trueworldview.net, where you'll find other helpful resources as well. Join us each week at 11:30 on Friday and Saturday, and noon on Sunday for The Dean's List.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or iHeartMedia.